And welcome to Opera Now. Today's show is going to be centered around opera education and touring. It has been a big part of most companies, even big places, so certainly smaller companies in this country, but also big companies. They have a big education department now in almost every one. And you know, the goal there is they're trying to ultimately, I assume, you know, cultivate a new audience for this art form, which is, some say, is slowly dying, or at least some of the audience is dying off. But, you know, the popularity of it has been that, you know, they want to spread the word, and they want to introduce children to what's happening in it. So I've got a panel of three people today. First off, I've got Katrina Thurman.
Hello.
Katrina is an Opera Now virgin. This is her first time on the show. unlike Rocky Horror, you know, we're not going to make you do anything, though. Don't worry.
I was going to say, are we going to do the ceremony?
Yeah. We've got Ethan. Good old Ethan. You guys all remember him from previous shows. And another new member, Benjamin De La Fuente.
Thanks, Michael, for having me.
You're welcome, Benji. Thank you for coming on. Okay, so you guys are all on here because at some point in your career, you have all been a part of an opera education tour.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody want to maybe take a second and explain a little bit what they're about?
Sure, Michael. I'll venture a guess. An opera education tour often is when a company will assemble a young, fresh-faced cast of singers, put them into a van, and send them into the hinterlands of whatever state where the company is based, usually performing for people on both ends of the demographic spectrum, mainly for children, and then sometimes on some tours you get to perform at night for their parents and grandparents and extended families as well. And it is called an education tour because most of your time is spent in schools performing for children and also many times conducting workshops, interactive workshops with them to teach them about the art form of opera and promote the company and just the art form in general. And these tours can last, I suppose, from anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks to 4 months, which is what I did.
4 month tour. Wow.
Four ten.
That's true. Oh my God, that's right. Katrina has you beat. So.
Oh really? Oh my goodness. Yeah. So that's basically it. I mean, does that sound about right, you guys?
That sounds. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have said it better myself, and because I wouldn't have been able to, that's why I didn't. So. So you were on one that was 4 months, Benji. You said?
Yeah, it was 4 months. It was with the Opera Iowa tour, 2005, which is run by the Des Moines Metro Opera, and it's a pretty heavy it's a heavy traveling tour in that generally we were based outside Des Moines where DMMO is, and we would leave on Monday morning and then usually come back on Friday afternoon traveling. All over the state in between. We were within Iowa the entire time except for a week in Missouri. That was 4 months.
And what about you, Katrina?
Well, I've done a few different touring programs. One was, with Natchez Festival Opera, and that was a 5 week total program doing tours plus singing chorus and bit roles in the main stage operas. Then there was the Utah Opera, which was the long one. That was 10 months of various things, doing touring and, certainly singing for the students, but also doing workshops, day-long workshops for, you know, 300 or 400 kids passing through the day. You know, you'd have have classrooms worth of kids that you'd be teaching. And then we'd also do concerts with Utah. And then, of course, Omaha, which you and I did together. And
that's right. We were there, it was about 5 weeks, right?
Yeah, again.
Something like 55 shows in 5 weeks. Some crazy
it was
number.
A lot.
And that we weren't on the road that much for that. Most of it was local.
That's right.
We hit pretty much every school and, you know, within 10 square miles of the city. What about you, Ethan?
I was on tour. I guess you didn't even know this, Michael, but I was on a brief tour. I'd say we didn't really do it consecutively weeks, but I'd say maybe over a period of 2 months in fall 2000, shortly after graduating from Manhattan School, 2002 maybe, or I'm sorry, 2001, and then again in the spring, 2002.
Go ahead.
All right. So I toured briefly with the children's show in the fall of 2001, shortly after graduating from Manhattan School of Music. It was conceived, produced, and directed by a man by the name of Don Westwood, who I like to describe to people as, if anybody's ever seen this movie, The Apostle, starring Robert Duvall. If you can imagine that character.
Give me a piece.
Yeah, pretty much in the form of a director, producer. He's actually a really great guy, and he means really well. And he's managed solely on his own to, under the umbrella company called Opera Management Corporation, he has like 5 or 6 different breakoff companies. And one of those companies he calls Children's Opera Theater. And he's, over the years, built up rapport with various theaters, houses, pretty much throughout the Northeast, New England area. So I, through recommendation, had auditioned for him. And he asked me if I wanted to do the children's tour, something I'd never considered before, and decided what the heck. It was actually a pretty decent paycheck. So that was one of the main reasons I actually decided to do it. And I just never had any experience whatsoever with children's opera.
Mm-hmm. What was the show you did?
Well, he entirely made it up. It was, he wrote the book. I was trying to find actually out. I couldn't remember what the title of the show actually was, but it basically all the music, it wasn't original music. It was mostly Mozart with a couple other arias that he had rewritten lyrics for. And then he wrote, you know, kind of a loose plot and with a theme, and he based the characters, like my character was actually Merlin, the magician.
Ah.
And yeah,
did you have
only
a beard back then?
No, I didn't actually.
Just the sinister goatee?
No, I was totally clean shaven.
Oh, wow.
Actually.
A young
and he
man.
Had me, but he had me in this weird Arabian Jafar type costume.
No pointy hat?
No, yeah, and I was apparently supposed to be Merlin.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so that was my tour experience. We did a lot of shows throughout the new Northeast. I probably did about 20 or 30 performances in the fall and another 10 in the spring.
Was it on the road the whole time, or?
We'd go on the road for like a week. You know, doing a different show in a different city each day. And then we maybe go back to Manhattan and then go do another week.
Okay.
The longest trip we made was very random. He flew us all down to Naples, Florida, just to do 2 shows in their beautiful concert hall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was very random, but he had arranged it, and he flew us all down and put us up in a nice hotel. And in fact, every hotel we stayed in was pretty nice.
That sounds like a good tour.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the education tours I've done.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it really wasn't that bad, aside from the fact that the show was pretty silly, which I'm sure you've all had that experience. And I didn't, you know, we'll talk more about it, but there were a lot of ups and downs for me in terms of performing for children. Mostly, for me, it depended on the age group we were performing to.
Yeah, I mean, that's an important thing, I think, too, because, I mean, the stuff that I've done, and I'm sure the stuff you guys have done, it's been a variety of levels. It's been from, you know, very young children to kids in high school. And just the reactions from the audiences are so varied. You never know what the hell people are going to say. You never know if they're going to laugh, if they're going to scratch. There was one of the shows that I did, I had to be, you know, made up as an older man. And there was this scene where, you know, there was 4 of us. Katrina was the younger girl, and there was this other tenor who was the younger guy. And there's a scene where the two of them kiss, and, you know, kids were clapping or whatever. And then I was supposed to be this older guy, and I kiss this girl, and everybody's, you know, like screaming, like it was the most disgusting thing they'd ever seen before in their lives. And this is all happening, you know, while we're trying to perform this. Oh, and it's this emotional.
That's the greatest. That is the greatest, you know. I mean, and like children will not hide how they feel about what you're doing for them, you know. And like, and it can be the most gratifying and the most terrifying thing about doing these tours. These audiences are unlike anything you would find anywhere else.
Yeah.
But you know, Ethan touched on something that was that maybe a lot of people don't know who haven't done these tours, which is that when he was talking about the volume of performances, you know, singers should know that if you do one of these tours, you are going to be working a lot. You'll be doing, you know, probably at least 9 or 10 shows a week, Monday through Friday on many of these tours. And oftentimes, you're going to be doing these shows like at 8 in the morning, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Plus putting the set together, oftentimes emptying the van.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Extracting splinters from your hands and other people's hands as well.
I mean, that's the thing. They cart everybody off in this, you know, one of those extra long vans, and that's your home. You know, and you've got to fit all the sets, you've got to fit all the costumes, everything in there.
As well as your egos, too,
maker,
I might add.
You know,
oh, I know.
Right, egos, coffee maker, little boombox, somebody's got a humidifier.
Maybe a guitar for the first day.
A chest full of, you know, food so you can eat something other than hamburgers when you're in a town of 700.
Yeah. And hard-boiled eggs are discouraged. Discouraged.
They are. Always wondering what hotel you're going to be staying at. Somebody complaining why we're not staying at a nicer hotel.
The American in Webster City, Iowa. A great place.
Is it?
Jacuzzi. Oh, yeah.
Very nice.
It's a good chain, actually, in general. You'll find them throughout the Midwest. They make fresh cookies and leave them out at 3:30, so make sure that you're there at 3:30.
That sounds like a plan. So, and another thing, too, is that, you know, while the shows are most of the time for children, high school to or younger, there's oftentimes you'll do a show in the town, like at some local art center that is, you know, for the adults of the town to come to. And they are some of the greatest audiences I have ever encountered in my life. They're so grateful. They're interested. They're knowledgeable. And they're fantastic to sing for.
Yeah, I might add, you know, like, I totally agree with you, Michael. And if you go on...
And I should
tours,
make a point, too. I'm sorry. A lot of times these tours will have a combination of maybe a made-up show featuring operatic singing or some children's opera, but there's also, you'll be doing like one kind of paired or scaled-down version of a mainstream opera, like a Mozart or whatever. Was that the case with you guys?
Yeah.
We actually did like a concert, you know, for the adults in the community. We would do a concert of excerpts, half of it being opera excerpts of different kinds of ensembles. For example, we did something from The Barber of Seville, something from Nozze, the trio, stuff from Fledermaus, and then we'd have a second half of the concert, which was more crossover kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
We did, the year I was with Opera Iowa, we did Cozy, and for these evening performances, and for the most part, it really was, for the most part, uncut. Almost all of it was there. And, you know, I agree with Michael. I mean, these experiences are great. These audiences are just unbelievable. And it's really, like, doing a tour like this is, like, these tours are a great argument in favor of doing opera in English here in America. Because you will find that people really do pay attention to what's coming out of your mouth and what the words are that you're singing. I mean, there was one performance we did, like, in Northeast Iowa of Cozy when... like the auditorium was packed and these people clapped like every time one of us made an entrance onto the scene. It was like being on an episode of The Honeymooners or something. or
let me say that, Benji, you know? Boy.
it was unbelievable. It was, and it's something, it's a level of kind of gratitude that is really rare, especially for singers who are based in New York and are used to performing in New York where, you know, everyone has seen and heard everything a million times. You know, once you leave big cities and go out into the country, you know, you'll find that your talents are really appreciated by people. And it's actually a really nice thing, especially when you're so far away from home and the people who you love and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of heading towards another point that I wanted to, or a topic to discuss about, you know, what the benefits of this was. These tours were for you as an artist. Do you think you really gained anything from it at all? Was it just something maybe you thought you had to go through as kind of a as part of, you know, paying your dues?
I think I can say that it had a couple of different purposes for me. It certainly felt like paying your dues because it's just a way to kind of make your way up the ladder and be noticed, build the resume, and get experience and real experience. But for me, it was a really beneficial way to learn about my voice. I mean, you know, when you have to get up at maybe 5:36 in the morning to get on the road to do a show at 7:45 or 8 o'clock, there's a lot of things you learn about what you're capable of and what you're not capable of, and what you have to do to really take care of your voice so that you can be on for a show, because the other people in the cast truly depend on you. I mean, if someone's out, I mean, sure, there's ways, at least the show that we did, for example, in Utah, there were ways that if someone was sick, the show could be altered and we could continue, but, you know, after 3 or 4 days of someone being really sick, the rest of the cast members would begin to suffer too, because now they were singing more. So, I mean, there was a lot about learning stamina and kind of learning a more healthy way of singing.
Yeah.
I think was absolutely required.
Well, it certainly helps you to think on your feet too, just because you never know the audience reaction is going to be. Sometimes it can be hostile, you know, depending on the type of school you're in, I think.
Right.
Now, so just to clarify, Ben and Katrina, so you were actually singing excerpts or condensed versions in English of actual operas, is that correct? Of legit operas, like Cozy. You weren't doing actual children's operas, is that correct?
Go.
Yeah, well, we did the almost full version of Cozy for our evening performances, which were sporadic, and then during the daytime we did children's opera, Three Little Pigs, adapted by John Davies, which is all Mozart music. And then actually for junior high schoolers and high schoolers, we did a condensed version of Cozy, which was about 45 minutes long. And that's another one of these things. I don't know if you guys had this experience in your tours, if you ever did a full version of a show and a condensed version of the show as part of the same tour, but sometimes it's a little bit hard to keep those things straight. And you know, there were a couple of times when, you know, there's one time towards the end of our tour when we were doing the short Cozy for some middle schoolers, and it was about 65 degrees in April, so I was kind of giddy, and I walked in, you know, and I was like saying something like, that's the way to say it or something. And these two guys on stage are looking at me like, what the fuck are you guys, are you doing here? What are you doing here? And the guy at the piano is rifling through the score, trying to figure out where I am with the recitative. And, you know, basically about 10 seconds later, I realized where I was. And, you know, we were able to fix it. But once we got behind our plywood set, I got punched in the stomach by Guglielmo. But it was really funny.
Oh, man.
For myself, I did a variety of things. With Natchez Festival Opera, I did Seymour Barab's Toy Shop. I was Pauline the Doll. It was fantastic. And then with Utah, it was Opera Olympics. So that was like a bunch of scenes made together. And the Opera Olympics show was that we divided into teams. You had the girls against the guys, or you could have the high voices against the low voices. There was a mezzo, soprano, tenor.
That sounds like stirring theater.
It's really strange. Well, the kids, and this was for, like, you know, all the elementary age kids, but they would get really involved because they would get to vote on which team they thought should win each event. And we would have events like sing the highest note, who could sing the lowest note, who had the best emotion in their aria. And then with teams, you know, whose duet was more exciting with use of the props, you know, and all these things would explain what was the importance of the event, like, you know, what props are and how good are we using them. And then the kids would vote. And so by the end, you'd have one team winning or losing. Of course, we could always fix it if we wanted, but it was fun. So that was that.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That's a nice idea, because I like the idea of, I mean, it's great to do an actual, you know, a Seymour Barab stuff is great, or, you know, a condensed Cozy. But I actually love the idea of actually making it, you know, a musical education for the children, that they learn something about theater, about music, about opera. Try and spread a little enthusiasm for it.
Well, did you ever do the education thing at Manhattan School, Ethan?
I did not.
You did not? Okay.
I saw them. I saw a few of them.
Yeah, because that was a thing that they would make up the show.
Yeah,
I
thought that was actually a great idea, and I think, again, I like some of the pre-written ones I've seen. That was one of the things I didn't really like about the show that I did, is, you know, he made up this kind of silly little plot, quote, plot, and he changed the lyrics, you know, and he kind of put it all together. And, you know, the songs were great. I was singing most pretty much Mozart stuff, Papageno, Guglielmo.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't like the fact that I didn't really understand what we were teaching, what the education was.
Yeah.
Other than they're listening to music, they're hearing legit voices, and they're kind of had, you know, there was a slight moral behind the story. But I more like the idea of it being the children's opera coming out of the creativity of the singers, maybe either actual improvisation or they create the show through improv and then take it on the road.
Yeah. Well, I know the one that I did, or one of the ones, that the main one that I did, was a scaled down version of an opera. It was Cold Sassy Tree by Floyd, which was kind of an odd thing to take out to kids.
Oh, that is interesting.
But when we condensed it down to four, it was a, you know, a tenor, two sopranos, and a bass, myself. And basically to four, there was mainly four characters, but at some point some people were doing double duty playing different characters. And it's a great piece, and they did a very good job of condensing it down into something that made sense. It was just an odd choice, I think, for children, especially, you know, when I would get, you know, screams of disgust.
Sure.
When I kiss somebody. So, oh well. But that could have happened with anything, I think, maybe given me.
Sure.
That is true, Michael.
That is very true.
Well, again, and I want to touch upon the point, I don't know if you guys had this experience, but for me, it depended so much. We did perform for some families and parents, but in general, it was schools and kids that either we went... It pretty much was in theaters, and they bussed the kids in.
Mm-hmm.
And it really did depend. It was a pretty... The show was really written for a very young age, I'd say, first grade, kindergarten. So I think when we had kids or anything older than third or fourth grade, it was just pretty silly for them. They didn't really, they were bored. They didn't really care. And then as soon as we got kindergarten, they just, you know, they love it.
Yeah.
Any kind of silly, funny thing. And just that kind of singing, I think they really enjoyed. But I don't know if you guys doing Cozy probably would be even better for older kids than younger.
Yeah, you know, the junior high kids and the high school kids liked it, you know, because it had to do with sharing partners and whatnot and, you know, that kind of fun stuff.
Swapping.
But there were, you know, we did workshops, you know, kind of what you're talking about, Ethan, where we educate the young folk about various things about the art form. And usually it was with little kids, but sometimes we would have to do these workshops with kids who are like in fifth and sixth grades. And one of my colleagues on the tour used to do this presentation about, in Iowa, they have this thing called the six pillars of good character, you know, things like respect and, you know, like listen, you know, very, very basic things about how a young person should comport himself or herself. And basically, you know, it's baby stuff. And there was one time, I think, when she had to give this to like sixth or seventh graders. And and she's like 3 feet tall to begin with, God bless her. And I mean, it was ugly. You know, she felt like an idiot. she felt like an idiot talking to these teenagers like this. And these teenagers.
Was it like this, the pillars of opera or?
No, Pillars of Character. This is like an Iowa, but it was incorporated into, you know, there was an opera spin to it.
Okay.
But, you know, it was brutal, basically. And that happened a couple times. So, you know, like all of you said, it's just like sometimes when things are age appropriate, it's terrific. And when they're not, it makes for great conversation at the end of the day, basically.
Mm.
Yeah.
I remember one thing we had to do, too, was part of the education, we would go to these schools and perform, and we would also give little workshop choral workshops, because one thing that Omaha did was they had an event, I guess it was in the fall sometime, where various choirs from various high schools would come in and sing with the symphony. And it was an evening of, you know, operatic excerpts and some choral stuff that they did. So we would go into the choral rehearsals and, you know, kind of give them examples and work with them, which I thought was pretty interesting. And then, you know, the thing is they got to sing with the symphony at the end of it all. So that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
That is cool. You know, when in Sioux City, we actually got to do like master classes for a bunch of high schoolers who were about to audition for like University of Iowa and Iowa State for their music schools. And it was cool because, you know, these kids were already seniors in high school and they had had vocal training and, you know, they were singing like, you know, Zarastro and stuff or like Kirribino and stuff that we could actually, that we could actually help them with, you know, and offer them good feedback. And so like there's a potential for good highlights like that if you get yourself on a tour that has a good schedule.
Yeah, definitely. Did you ever do anything like that, Ethan, or like working with kids?
In terms of more...
Like going into doing like workshop things, was that part of your tour at all? Was it all just performing?
Not really. We
and
really
staying
just...
in sweet hotels, apparently, in Florida.
We really did just go in. We had our show. I guess, you know, we really did have a pretty good setup. We basically arrive at the theater. He had a small crew that would take care of the sets.
Whoa.
And... we would just show up, check our props, warm up a little bit.
Get some hot tea delivered to your dressing
room. Yeah, I mean, the hardest thing for me, it wasn't that bad because, like I said, I wasn't singing anything that demanding or anything that high. So I could pretty much just wake up, have my coffee and a bagel, and call it a day.
Oh, man.
But, wow.
But
that sounds almost as good as the Les Mis tour.
Almost. The soprano was a little harder. She had to sing Juliet's aria. The tenor had to sing, you know, Magic Flute. So it was a little tougher for them. They had to really wake up, really, really warm up.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, yeah, we stayed in pretty much nice Holiday Inns and stuff and didn't really have to do much else beyond our performances. But like I said, the hardest thing for me, not that I was ever really ashamed of doing the show, I just kind of... I know that came out terrible. No, I just never really. I think if I had been doing a tour similar to the thing that, you know, you guys had done, I would have felt a little more satisfaction that I was actually providing an education. Whereas most of the time, I felt like the only thing I really was doing is they were getting exposed to music, which is great, and somewhat operatic music, and that they were, you know, going to see live theater, which I think is always beneficial in any capacity. But I don't know. Maybe that was just my experience, although from what I heard or what I know, you know, there are other tours that do these kind of made-up mock shows that aren't actual shows or based on fairy tales or anything that don't really have much of a point. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really sure why companies or universities kind of spend a lot of time and energy doing those type of shows. I don't know.
Probably don't have to pay for the rights to perform any of those because you're making it up. So
yeah, honestly, that's
save yourself 50 or
100
bucks right there.
Yeah,
exactly.
A lot of the money that comes from this actually, I think, is state funding. Actually, I mean, some of it is of their own, but a lot of it comes from the state, and they're given this. It enables them to do, you know, some companies to be as, you know, all over the place as they are because they get this money, which is a good thing. You know, they can use it for education and it helps the people, it helps the communities, and it also helps the opera company. It's good PR for them. So
absolutely.
That's true. And you know why
go ahead.
Oh, talking about money, Michael, I mean, you know, one thing about doing these tours is that it's a job, you know, and actually for a young musician, it's really nice to have a job where you're getting paid regularly. You know, even if it's, you know, whatever it happens to be, some of these tours, I'm sure, pay better than others. But it's a job, and it's a good job, and it's something that I would encourage any young singer to do. Certainly, I mean, you're not gonna, you'll be doing yourself a service by building credibility with a company and.
Well, and it's doing music versus temping.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
It beats digging ditches.
Michael, you speak from experience too.
That's true. That is very true. So, I mean, that was always in a way, it's even like it's almost become something you have to do if you want for good or for bad to kind of progress upward in this business. You know, coming out of college or coming out of grad school, they almost look for things like that.
And there are certainly worse things you could be doing, like Katrina said, and with your time.
Yeah. No, of course.
And, you know, and you know, like she said, yeah, you do find out a lot about your voice, about where its limits are, how early you can do certain things. But, you know, what's nice about singing for children all the time, or a lot of the time, is that you can actually experiment quite a bit with your voice in situations where you're in front of other people, but there isn't a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you've never taken the high G sharp, go ahead and give it a shot. You know, we did that. You know, and it's nice to be able to do that. But also, you know, you find out what your limits are in every way, because when you are traveling with a small group of people and you don't know anybody else when you're traveling and you're with each other, you know, spending more time each day together than you would with your own family if you were living with your family. You know, you find out what your limits are in terms of what you can handle with other people, and you know what, and you know, you spend a lot of time on your own, and so you learn a lot about yourself. You learn about how you know, the things that you need to do in order to kind of keep yourself sane when you're in a situation like that. And,
well, it's
and from that standpoint, it's really a very valuable experience from that standpoint too.
I mean, I think that's the thing that I think a lot of people would be most interested in hearing about, how, you know, you get five or six people who are thrown together in a van and are sent out, and you're with these people all the time. And, you know, initially it's like everybody is great friends, but then as things go on and you know, not even that clicks form, because it's not a big enough group. It's just you reach a point, I think, where you just sometimes you want to murder these people, but you know,
real world.
Exactly. But without the, you know, without the cushy gigs or the cushy digs, excuse me.
You know, they'll never find someone in a cornfield in Nebraska. That's something that people often that people think of. You could probably do it if you did it right.
Yeah. So, does anybody have any stories like that? Like things that were things kind of maybe, you don't have to name names certainly, but
so many.
Things got out of hand. Do you have Katrina? You have one that I love. Would you mind telling a little bit about it?
There were a couple related with Utah, but you know, it is right that, you know, the group gets thrown together. There were five of us, four singers and a pianist, and it was really just up to us to take care of our own sets, do our own thing. We took our 14-passenger van. They said, okay, here you go. This many people have the right to drive the van. Go for it. It was really quite trusting of the Utah Symphony and Opera to just hand the vehicle over to us. But anyway, 60 hours or more a week we'd be together, and certainly on tour, when you're gone for a week in the middle of nowhere, Utah, you know, and near Moab, just an hour from anything, there's no one else to look at. And we ended up having some issues, and one particular person in our group tended to be a little bit more explosive emotionally. And it's not to say that, you know, anybody's right or wrong, but there was one explosive person, and it came to a head actually in our first tour way back in September, and we were going all the way through to May. And it ended up with that someone got hit, namely me, during a show as a response from a mistake. But anyway, we ended up, our group ended up in group counseling. So that we could get through that year. And we did. But it was really a bumpy start and kind of a bumpy ride. But, you know, the point is that the Utah Opera administration really wanted to, you know, try to help us out. But it was funny to be able to say, you know, I did an opera education tour, and we did group counseling, the whole team thing where I'm a blue type personality, or I'm a red type personality.
Group therapy, I love it. That's what it can drive you to.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if it helped, but we made it through the year, and we did a lot of good shows, actually. That was the most important thing, that the kids didn't see it.
Yeah, so. I know personally that there was points where, you know, and it wasn't even anybody specific. It's just, I think, and we weren't even on the road that long, so I don't know how the hell you guys did it, going on the road for basically 4 months. You know, people complaining about this restaurant or that hotel or that hotel.
Yeah.
It's enough to drive you. And I think I blew up finally at the very end one day, but
Michael, you didn't really talk about I don't know what tour you were on. Did you do it through MSM or
no? It was with Opera Omaha. We did again. We weren't on the road probably as much as you guys, but we were a fair amount. we did, it was the condensed version of Cold Sassy Tree, where we took it to schools around Omaha and also to other states. But and the great thing, you know, when you're, you get to see places like the Corn Palace, like Vinegar Museums, small bits of Americana.
Because Nebraska really is.
It's great. I mean, those are the benefits, I think, you know, driving in the middle of nowhere and then coming upon these strange little things. My favorite was the, I'd been to the Corn Palace before, but we got to see a Vinegar Museum.
Yeah, that was great. So. Actually, that same tour, you know, I it was that same tour that we were somewhere. I was also on this tour, by the way, with Michael, and it was we were somewhere in South Dakota. It wasn't long after invasion, I think, of I don't know, Iraq, Afghanistan, somebody, something, and we encountered a restaurant that really had changed their menu to have Freedom fries. It was Freedom fries, right?
Yes.
Instead of French fries. It was really on the menu. That was neat.
It was a double order for you, Michael, right?
Exactly. extra grease on that freedom for me.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
That were there any like little curios that you came across, Benji?
Well, yeah, actually. There was the ice cream capital of the world,
Michael, by the way.
In Lamar's, Iowa, which is where Blue Bunny ice cream is made. So there's an ice cream museum there and some good hot dogs as well. The Field of Dreams in Dyersville, Iowa was another place, which is the actual site where they filmed the movie, and you can go on the field and, you know, walk around and play catch if you want and stuff like that. You know, but or actually, like, I would actually count just the Mississippi River as a whole as a really nice experience from the tour because we...
Do you consider yourself bi-coastal now as a result? If you consider the Mississippi one of the coasts,
yeah, I guess you would, right? I guess if you consider the Mississippi and Missouri rivers as as your coasts, yeah, then from Dubuque to Sioux City, then I think you are bi-coastal as an Iowan. But you know, I mean, the towns all up and down the eastern edge of Iowa are great, you know, and the river is fantastic. It's you know, and again, it's like most people really would not have occasion to visit, you know, these particular points along the Mississippi River, and so I was thankful for that. You know, it's
Well, it's funny. I often find myself saying, I mean, I can get it's even when I leave like a job, there's a chance, you know, that I won't like an operatic job. You know, I won't be back in the city anymore. And it's kind of strange to think that. And that's especially the case with, you know, when you're going to these small, you know, hamlets up and down the country. You know, when am I ever going to have a chance to be back here again? There's no reason to. Because it's a very odd feeling. What about you, Ethan? Any curios you saw on the road? The Northeast? I saw Boston.
Like you said,
Fenway Park,
you know, we were
cushy tour.
We were in some very, very small towns that I don't even remember the name of them.
Oh,
towns
really?
Towns in New Hampshire and Connecticut and Vermont.
Did you ever come across Brock's, the home of the famous salad bar in Connecticut?
That's not a small town.
In fact.
That's in Stamford.
That's true. And it's no more. Brock's is gone.
Very sad.
No, probably the highlight was going down to Naples to do that one show. Or two shows.
Well, I'm talking about like little strange things that you...
Strange things?
Like some strange museum you saw on the road, something. Everybody's got one of those usually. In New Hampshire, I'm sure there was something.
Not really. Not that I can think of.
A toboggan works, possibly. Or...
Can I bring up the
maple syrup
community?
Factory.
Oh, I want to hear about that, Katrina.
The only thing that wasn't odd, but was maybe a little... I don't often get, just because of my other... survival jobs here in New York and how many kind of celeb sightings I have. I don't normally get starstruck, but we actually, one of the highlights of the whole children's opera experience for me is we went to the Westport Playhouse. In
Paul Newman, Westport.
Right? Yeah, Paul Newman's place.
Paul Newman's place in Westport, and, you know, very famous.
Very famous theater.
Very famous old regional theater. And Paul Newman didn't come, but his wife, Joanne Woodward, actually came to the performance. She came before and introduced herself to all of us and then she came back after and said how much she enjoyed it, and that was pretty rewarding.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
just to meet her was a pretty awe-inspiring experience.
The many faces of Eve. Which face did she have on?
I guess
nobody knows that movie. Oh, well. I'm sorry, Katrina. Tell us about the free love in Utah.
Right. No, I just would love to relate the story that we had gone out to very western Utah, right on the border of Nevada, and we're, again, out for a week. And so each day we would go to different schools. And one day we had to set out for a two-hour trip to get to one school. And the entire drive, the first 15 minutes of that drive was spent on, you know, a paved road. And then we turned off that road and spent the remainder of the trip on gravel, going through canyons, valleys, you know, it's Utah mountain plateau land. We passed some sheep and sheep herders. Actually, we had to wait for many hundred sheep to get by. There was not a gas station. There wasn't a store. There wasn't a thing from the time we got on the road until the time we arrived. The only signposts were truly little wooden signs nailed to sticks. And, you know, the whole, you see the funny cartoons or the old movies where there's the signs hanging up from the stick and you're not sure which way you're really supposed to go. That really happened. And when we finally arrived to the town we were going to, I believe it was Trout Creek, Utah, we found out that we were in the kind of the remnants of the polygamist community that had been with that guy's last name, Green.
Oh, yeah.
He had just nabbed them. Right. He had something like 30 children. So actually some of his children were going to this school, and this is where they had lived. So it was really wild. And we were singing for like kids from kindergarten all the way to seniors, and there were probably, you know, I don't know, 30 of them there, just all his kids. I'm kidding. They weren't all his, but a lot of them were. And it was really wild. And, you know, it's a good thing that these folks there are so much in the way of sharing, because they had to share some gasoline with us so we could get home. Actually.
Did you have to siphon it out with a hose? Suck it out to start the flow?
It was truly unbelievable to take such a trip. It was something I'll never forget. That's like one of the best memories, actually. It was so interesting. Yeah. Great.
Good stuff. That's what it's all about. So, hey, quickly before we wrap up, do you guys have a performance story from the road? Favorite one? Anyone? Well, I have one. I will tell it. Nobody else does.
Yeah, tell your story.
This is one of the most rewarding experiences. One of the not rewarding, but certainly one of the highlights of my artistic life. I love it. We were doing the show in Omaha at a museum. We had two shows scheduled. The first, I think, was at 10, and the second was at 12. Did the 10 o'clock show, fairly well attended. People enjoyed the show. I think it was about an hour long. So, 11 o'clock, the show finished. Got something to eat, came back about 20 minutes later. So it's 11:30. Nobody's there yet. 11:40, nobody's there. 11:45, 11:50, 12, 12:05, 12:10. Nobody showed up, so we canceled the show due to total lack of interest. It was nobody wanted to see it. Nobody wanted to bother to come to see it. It was absolutely fantastic.
You shot the moon. That's
awesome. Loved
it. It was great.
What'd you do?
We packed up and went home.
Fantastic.
It was great. Nobody wanted to see us.
That was a sad day.
Oh, it was
that
great.
Really is what it's all about.
It is. You can't beat that. You can't write something like that. It just happened.
It's
I mean, even somebody comes in by accident looking for directions. We didn't even get that, you know? it's like that line in Unfaithfully Yours, you know, Dudley Moore doesn't want to go to China, and, you know, Albert Brooks says, you know, even if you get, you know, 100 million people come in looking for a restaurant. But we had nothing.
Wow.
Absolutely nothing.
Zero. That's terrific. That's a really great story.
So, well, listen, everybody, I want to thank you guys for coming on today. I really appreciate it. This was a good show. I enjoyed talking about it, and I think it's something that, you know, people in the business probably know about this, but there's people out there who aren't necessarily working in this business that listen, and this is an interesting aspect of it that doesn't get much press, certainly. I want to thank my guests, Katrina.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, the lovely Katrina Thurman. She is very lovely. I've seen her again, as I told you. Ethan Watermeyer.
Thank you for having
also,
me once more.
Also lovely, very devastatingly handsome.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And
right back at you.
The masculine and virile Benjamin De La Fuente.
Michael, you flatter me.
Homeowner. I would like to say, too, I've got a link up on our page, operanow.blogspot.com, that is it's a link to a diary that Benji kept when he was doing his tour. It's your man and I, it's a some like .mac page, but the link is up there. I think if I've got it as a like a diary, an operatic diary or diary of an operatic journey.
Oh, thanks for linking, Michael.
And it's but it's fantastic, absolutely. And you've had haven't you had some interest in this, or did you well, one time or?
Yeah, there's there's.
You want to share it with us?
Yeah, there has been interest, and there's I've been adapting it into a long form. Piece, which is still
a dramatic
still
play?
Being finalized. No,
it's a book, a movie,
a book, okay. And I hope to have details of this book perhaps later this year, hopefully.
Okay.
But, that's
maybe it'll even be made into a movie. You can get your brother to play you.
Hey,
since he's an actor.
Crazier things have happened.
And he's a regular on Law and Order, right?
SVU. On SVU, that's right.
He's plays, the tech guy.
The tech guy, Morales. So
I've seen him several times. Great. So,
but thanks for having me, Michael. Happy
You're very
year
welcome
to everybody.
Yes, this is our first show of the new year, so happy New Year to everybody.
Happy
As I mentioned,
year.
I tried to do a couple over the last 2 weeks, but it's just been a nightmare of scheduling for some reason. So, because I know Ethan, you're going to come on again soon. Hopefully, we're going to get that show about new opera.
That would be superb.
If it ever happens, I'll send out an email to you.
Okay.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Once again, if you have any questions, feel free to email us at operanow@gmail.com. And if you listen to the whole show, the beginning of the show as well, take what I said to heart. Give us a listen. Spread the word. This is a good show. I get good people on the show. And I want to make sure that everybody out there knows about it and is hearing it. We are the place to go. We're the only show of its kind. Taking the topics apart. We pull no punches, as you learned from today's episode. There's going to be a lot of broken, hurt feelings after today's episode, I'm sure, with our insider's look.